One of the big news stories in the UFO field is the actions of the U.S. Air Force and the way they cover things up as far as UFO reports are concerned. And now it appears that there's another Air Force that's going to be a little more open about it. We're talking about the Brazilian Air Force. And we have with us Ferry Yaduzu and A.J. Javard, who are both in Laughlin. And they are here to be on the show, and we're going to talk about the situation in Brazil. There are lots of things happen in Brazil UFO-wise, right?
Yes, in Brazil there are, I guess, thousands of different supernatural or UFO cases. And today we have a very important UFO investigator, but we would like to hear his complete name from his own mouth. Ademar.
Hi, hello. It's nice to be with you guys.
Hey, Jay. Welcome to the show. And Farah, thanks for bringing him over there to our booth so we can talk to him. Hey, Jay, before we get into this fantastic, unbelievable, I guess, cooperative effort for all appearances, at least, by the Brazilian Air Force, and making disclosure about ETs and UFOs. In your magazine, you had a remarkable story about, for lack of a better term, these demons with the red eyes.
All right, that's a fantastic
devil-looking creatures.
This is the reason I'm here in Laughlin today, because I will present the whole story of the Varginha case. I have done that before. Like 4 years ago, but we have new developments, new facts that surfaced recently, and I have to bring that all together and to deliver to the people, because we have a great deal of information about this case.
Yes.
We are talking about the capture of at least two unknown creatures that we believe are aliens, and a crash of an unidentified flying object in the city of Virginia and state of Minas Gerais in Brazil. Now I know that lots of people claim that UFOs crash here and crash there. I think that's a kind of an exaggeration all over the world. People claiming UFO crash here, UFO crash there, especially in South America. Everything that comes down has to be a UFO to people. But after you research them, you realize that very, very few cases are real. And this one, Virginia, is so well documented that there's no way you can you will not conclude that this is a genuine crash of an object.
Jay, I want to get into the disclosure story in a minute, but this story that you're talking about right now is phenomenal. I mean, do I understand this correctly? They actually took one of the beings to a hospital?
Make a long story short, because this is a long story. But it's an incredible story. Oh, it's an incredible story. It's very exciting. It's thrilling. It all happened on January 20, 1996, mm-hmm. which was a Saturday. By the early hours of that Saturday, people start seeing strange creatures in the neighborhood of Virginia. What happened is that they call the fire department to capture the creatures, because in Brazil, when you find
wild animals.
Yeah, you call the fire department.
So you thought it was an animal, probably.
They thought it was like a monkey or something.
Uh-huh.
Some of the people were throwing stones at the creatures.
This is what I cannot understand. This is what I cannot understand.
This is crazy.
This is horrible.
Horrible. But, you know, people in that location is very ignorant. They don't know what the hell is that. So, well, anyway, the fire department came, and along with the truck and a few men from the army, because there is a very large army facility which is nearby, like 15 miles or so, mm-hmm. and that army facility was designed by the superior authorities in Brasilia to go to search the area, because it has been detected by radar, and the only military facility in the area was that one.
Mm-hmm.
So what happened is that they got together and they captured one of the creatures. The other one ran. Mm-hmm. And the creature offered no resistance whatsoever. It was just captured with a net and taken into the truck and taken to this military facility, which is called Escola do Sargento das Armas, or School of Sergeant in Arms. Mm-hmm. It's a large corporation.
What happened to that creature?
It was very fastly removed to the state of São Paulo, which is about 200 miles south, mm-hmm. and was given to a team of forensic doctor at the University of Campinas, mm-hmm. which is one of the largest and most renowned universities in
Brazil. This creature is alive, right?
It died just after it was captured, something like during the transportation from the scene where the capture to the facilities in the army facility. It was already almost dead when it was captured, including there are some smelling in there, some like ammonia mm-hmm. smelling in the air. Yeah. Well, after that happened, all the forces were in a state of alert because they realized that there could be many other creatures spread in that vast region.
Same area.
Yeah, that's it. So at the afternoon of that same day, we had a witness report of three girls that during their walk home, close to some empty field, they saw kneeling close to a wall, a second creature. That creature was appearing like it was suffering. Mm-hmm. The girls saw it and they thought, oh, we've seen the devil, and they run, mm-hmm. run away. That story spread, that three girls in the town saw the devil or something like that. So it arose even more interest of authorities who were all together searching all over the region, the area, to find other creatures. So we're talking about civilian police, military police, army, some federal police personnel, people from all different forces all together, but in different cars, in different unities, searching all over to see if they can find any other creature. Another one has been reported that afternoon, so they increased the amount of people searching for the creature. And eventually, at 8 p.m. on that very Saturday, January 20, 1996, a patrol car of the military police of the city of Minas Gerais, with two men on board, one driving and the other one on the passenger seat, the car has no signs of the military police because it's a car used in the intelligence service of the police. They are called B2. Now, they almost run over another creature across the street. Mm-hmm. Yes. Immediately they stop the car, and the guy who was sitting in the passenger seat takes off, goes there, grabs the creature with his own bare hands, sitting back in the seat of the car, and puts the creature in his lap.
I can't believe it.
Can you believe that?
Hey, Jay, what size was this creature?
It was like 1 meter high. Uh-huh. It was it has a disgusting smell.
Brown color skin.
It has, besides the smell, it like some glue over his body or something like that. It was a disgusting thing, probably already dying. Well, it was taken then, the guys took the creature to a small health unit in the neighborhood of Virginia, a small neighborhood. What happened then? When they arrived there, they always have a medical on duty or things like that, and that time they had one, and the medical say, oh, the doctor said, we can't deal with this. This is not human. We're not even equipped to deal with humans in this unit. You have to take it away. So they took the creatures to the main hospital of Virginia. By that time, all the other forces were already informed that a second creature was captured. And they all got together to that hospital to wait the guys to bring this creature, which eventually happened for 20 minutes or so after that. When it arrived to the hospital, a complete branch of the maternity and part of the pediatric were isolated. These two branches were isolated to contain this creature for a few hours. But it became obvious right after that it couldn't be kept there because That hospital is very popular. People go there looking, seeking for assistance for and everything. And it simply, the creature couldn't be kept there for longer. So they transferred the creature to another hospital, which is a private hospital a little away from downtown called Humanitas. And at this hospital, the creature remained for about 24 hours. It was there, but before it died, it was tentatively treated by the doctors, then it eventually died. This is the situation that involved the capture of the two creatures.
Did the creatures, did they make a noise? Did they communicate or what? Do you know?
Okay, this is part of the new revelation stuff that we have. For a few years, we haven't got almost no information whatsoever from doctors, from nurses, from people at the hospitals, except a few details. Like, we know that at the second hospital as this creature was, before it was dead or before it died, this creature was examined in a few ways. They took out his tongue, which was rolled, and when it was totally unrolled, what did we say? It was divided.
Like a serpent.
Like a serpent, yes.
Exactly like a snake.
It had red eyes, didn't it?
Yeah, it had red eyes. It had very visible veins in the upper arm and on the shoulders and on the neck, indicating that respiration was a problem for them in our environment. Plus, the smell was felt by different people in some cases during the capture, during the transportation. The smell was so strong that people would cry. People have reported that. Now we have about 80 at all live firsthand witnesses. 80. This is why we believe that this case is much bigger than Roswell, because we had creatures captured alive by military in the year 1996, which is pretty recent. 8 witnesses are yet alive, except for one.
The guy. Died, yes.
The guy.
And soldier.
That's it. The guy who captured the second. No.
Wait a minute. You're saying that somebody died as a result of touching this creature or
and
being
he had
around
a disease.
The creature?
His immune system was completely destroyed, and in about 2 weeks or more, he died of several infections that looked like septicemia. He was treated by different medicines, antibiotics, but it didn't work. This guy, Jerry, was 33 years old.
33
years old?
Very young.
He was very young. He was the age of my son.
He was very young.
He was a strong guy, and in his top conditions, he has just passed some examinations in the military to go up rank in the police military, and he was absolutely fine, including he wasn't even working at that day. He was at home on a holiday, on a vacation for a weekend. He was called upon to go on duty to help to find and catch the creature.
Definitely bad luck on his part. Did other people involved? Did someone else get sick?
We only know about him, but we have a suspicion that other people may have also got some kind of infection or immunodeficiency.
Something happened to the immune system.
But what happened is that this case, it started, and because of the girls, their role in this whole thing is very important, because the girls, when they said they have seen the devil to their neighbors, to their community, it spread all over. So a rumor started, and it attracted the attention of a UFO investigator that we have in that very town. Otherwise, maybe this case will never be known. When this investigator heard about this, he's a lawyer called Ubirajara Rodriguez and a college professor of law. When he heard about that story, he decided to go and check out on the very same day. Actually, excuse me, the other day, on Sunday,
the following day.
So what happened is that he realized that maybe something is behind this story. Maybe not. Let's go and check. He went and checked, and he found out that there was more people reporting seeing the creatures, and people reporting seeing trucks from the army capturing the creatures. Then when he started investigating, right after that, on the 22nd and on 23rd and 24th, the army didn't have time to shut off the information, to cover up. So the information was still fresh. We could get as much as possible amount of information right immediately. But after 1 week or 2 weeks, when the time had passed, the army cover-up was so tight that very few things could surface. But
that sounds familiar.
Yeah, that's not familiar. It's the same thing all over. Yes.
Jay, your UFO magazine in Brazil is in Portuguese, but Farah translated this story for me. And from what I remember, a lot of the people in the village thought these were the devil. And maybe his disciples, and actually didn't somebody from the government or somebody try to get the girls to change their story, to cover it up?
At some point, when the story became nationally known, because the girl had gone to programs, TV programs, and gone in magazines and everything, when the case was already known, when the population of Brazil already know that the army captured two creatures, when this story became bigger, the girls and the mother, their mother, were visited by some guys who tried to stop them from showing up. So we don't know who they are. Maybe they are military, but we don't have that for sure. Maybe they are people from some extreme religions that we have in Brazil, but we don't know for sure who they are. But they, including they appeared and visited them other two times, and they tried to bribe them. They didn't threat them in a way that they couldn't feel like, we were going to be killed or something. No, they were tried and tempted mm-hmm. to lie about this, to say that it was all a joke, forget about it, don't pay attention to this. Go to the station, and he even said it's not going to be a small station, TV station here in Virginia. We're going to go to a major station in São Paulo or so. And they were tempted to say that, I'm sorry, quote unquote, it's all a joke that went out of control, something like that, because all the material evidences that were gathered after that were based in the starting point, what that was here, their experience. If they claim that they have been joking, probably it will disregard or it will diminish the importance.
Hey, I know down in Brazil they don't have a Freedom of Information Act per se like they do here, but you and some other UFO investigators have all gotten together and formed a commission, right? I mean, I think there's Landmark Pettit that's helping you out, Claudia Colbert, Rafael Curry, Fernando Romaldo, and Robert Beck. And you guys expect to really find a lot of information out. I believe you have the Air Force from Brazil cooperating with you somewhat.
So right now, since last April 2004, we have started a nationwide campaign called UFOs Freedom of Information Now in Brazil. It carries the Brazilian flag. It's a beautiful campaign. It's on our website and some other websites. Plus, we have a petition, and we are asking people to subscribe, to give their signature to this petition. So we present it to the President of Brazil, President Luiz Inácio Lula da Silva, sometime between April and May this year. We already have 24,000 signatures of people who recognize that the UFO phenomenon is serious business, and the government shouldn't be keeping information in confidential. Plus, we have a memorandum which is called Manifesto da Ufologia Brasileira, or Brazilian Ufology Manifesto.
Easy for you to say.
Yeah. And it's a letter of intentions where we not only ask our government to open its files, but we also offer to our government our expertise, our talent, our efforts as civilian UFO researchers to investigate in conjunction with the military the UFO phenomena. Because the military have the resources. They have the installations, the means of transportation, communication, the labs, the personnel, whatever. But when they conduct the UFO research, they only do that as a job, as a duty. And the Brazilian UFO researchers, as any other UFO research in the world, we do that for a passion, because we have the talent. We have something that is...
You know, I'm going to be in Laughlin tomorrow, but Roberta tells me that there's a lot of people there already, besides you two. In fact, we've lined up some people to ask you some questions, AJ. I believe Mike from Nashville is there. Is that right, Mike? You have a question for AJ? Yeah.
My question is, if you ever entertain the scientific question of, is it obvious they don't want us to find them, they don't want to make contact, that they are more advanced? We can see them. People are seeing them.
AJ, I think what Mike's getting at is something I kind of feel might happen in your country, even before it does ours, and that's disclosure. What do you think about that?
But it's a very solid movement up there in Brazil right now. And just before I came to this conference in the States, I was signalized by a phone call from the very top authorities in Brasilia about it. And I was given lots of hope that the disclosure that we are seeking, the opening of files and the end of cover-up, may happen this year.
And
this year, probably this semester, upon an invitation from the Brazilian Air Force, I'll be visiting the Brazilian Aerospace Command in the city of Brasilia, which is the federal capital, and we are starting new steps of cooperation between military and civilians. I'm trying to convince the authorities in Brazil that Brazilian is the leading country in South America.
That's true, exactly.
It's the leading country, the largest, the most expressive,
in many ways,
most expressive economy. So see, Uruguay, which is one-tenth of the size of Brazil, one-tenth of the economy of Brazil, or maybe less, has a commission of UFO researcher consistent of civilian and military for 26 years, officially. Mm-hmm. Do you know that?
No, I didn't know that.
It's an official commission for UFO research where military take place, where civilian take place for 26, maybe 27 years now. Chile has the same, a much stronger organization just like that. It's not totally open to the public, but it's somehow open to the UFO researcher for 8 years.
You know, there's lots of things, AJ, going on in Brazil, besides UFOs and flying saucers and little ETs. I mean, we just talked about the strange creatures. I remember a story about a Bigfoot character comes up in somebody's backyard there in Brazil. And things are happening on the Amazon and with the natives. You know, Brazil's full of interesting tales.
Well, we have lots of cases like that. We have to favor, very interestingly, that the UFO casuistics, the reunion of cases in Brazil, is slightly different from the United States. Like here, most cases of abduction involve grays. We don't have as many grays in Brazil. I think it's kind of a cultural process that here people, when they got abducted, they describe the abductors as grays. And in Brazil, we do have some grays being reported, but we mostly have aliens just like us, exactly like us. Maybe Nordic, but sometimes dark skin as well. Yeah. We have several cases. The difference between most cases and United States and the case in Brazil and other countries of South America, is the pollution that there is when the case is reported. Like in the States, most cases that are new gets to the press already polluted, or reach to the conferences, or reach to the UFO research already polluted with some background sound. Now in Brazil we have very little pollution. When someone from rural area calls you to report a sighting or even an abduction, the case is yet crystal clear, has not been polluted, there's no much programs about UFOs on TV, there's no much discussion about UFOs there. People don't fantasize on top of the cases to make them look better or something like that. So this is why we have more pure cases, not only in Brazil, but especially in some other areas of South America, such as Chile, such as Peru, such as Bolivia, countries that are less developed and that have much more people living in the rural areas, not urban areas, where the sightings, the most extreme sightings, the most extreme cases of contact took place in the rural. If you make a comparison between cases that happen in urban areas and the ones that took place in the rural areas, you'll find that these last ones are much purer and much more intense.
Would prefer to travel over country, not in the city.
Yeah, because human beings are all over, and we are what they want to check on. They want to get us to see what we have to offer, maybe the fluids, the genetic material, whatever. And it's much difficult to get for people in towns, especially in great towns such as Sao Paulo, New York, Paris, Tokyo, whatever. It's easier to get them in small towns and preferably in small properties in the field. Sure, but it doesn't mean that the cases in big cities doesn't happen. No, they do happen, yeah. Including they happen quite often, including abduction.
You know, AJ, a lot of these things we hear about that have been chalked up in the past as the supernatural or the occult could very well be ET related. In fact, the lady sitting next to you there, Farah, is an expert on vampires and werewolves, believe it or not. Yes, that sweet lady there. And she's written a book in Turkey about vampires. It's a bestseller. And Farah, maybe you have some questions for AJ about the occult.
All the extraterrestrial races. But I can see something common in vampires or the conception of vampire with some ETs. And the Virginia case ET has such a description that it reminds us the evil, devil, monster types that we used to see in science fiction movies or in some video clips of today's music and in the history.
That's it.
So you say that in the United States most of the aliens are grays. People see grays. And in your country they don't have too much grays.
And this is
a new kind of ET, but it is not very new, because we heard about stories about that kind of creatures, which has a monster looking.
Yeah, but they are rare also. But what you said is absolutely true. Some aliens have been seen throughout the years, throughout the history, as vampires, as ghosts, as monsters, as creatures that belong to the kingdom of fantasy. Some people think they are fantasy, but they are real. Now, the Virginia creatures, they had this strange format. They were short guys, big heads, three protuberances in the head. They were not horns, but protuberances.
Uh-huh.
Protuberances, three protuberances like we have in the magazine.
Okay.
And besides, their veins were very, very visible over the body. And they have three feet, three finger and two toes. Now, these were the creatures seen in Virginia. We wonder, how come a creature like that can result of a crash of a UFO or something? Because these creatures seem so primitive. No, so also vulnerable, Farah, but also so primitive.
Yes.
No clothing. You would expect that inside a UFO there are creatures sophisticated in such a way that they can maneuver the ship. They come from a very advanced society in space or something like that. So it's a surprise, as it is also a big puzzle.
Also, I have another question about Virginia creatures. You say that they had a strange, very strong smell.
That's it.
Do you remember that?
Like meat in decomposition.
Okay. In medieval times, ancient times, how was the description of the devil? Evil. When the devil comes, evil comes, it comes with a very bad smell. Do you remember this?
Yeah, you can find it in the literature.
Yes.
You know what just happened? I was given a book right now by my friend Dr. Roger Lear from Thousand Oaks. And the name is UFO Crash in Brazil, a genuine UFO crash. We're surviving it. It's a complete surprise. He has told me about this book, and we've been waiting this week long to see if it arrives. And this eventually arrived, and now you have this book about the crash of Virginia, finally published here in the United States. Very good, doctor.
How was the skin of the creatures in Virginia case?
They were brown in color. Brown, yeah, just like your cake, brown, dark brown actually. And you know, but the most interesting thing about this creature is that even being ugly, even being sticky, smelly, whatever, it had two arms, two legs, a body, and a head. And the head was attached to the body by a neck. So this is what happens in 99.9% of the cases. It doesn't matter if the aliens are tall or short, if they have regular sized heads, or if they are big heads. It doesn't matter. They have the same format as human. Now, we know from all the studies in science that this format, the human format, is related to the planet that you live in. If you live in this planet because of the size of the planet, of the distance of this planet to its sun, of the time it takes to rotate around itself, and this all contributes, as well as with the gas in the atmosphere, the amount of gravity that we're supposed to receive every day, and this and that. This contributes to generate the human as it is. Now, you would expect that people coming from other planets that have different conditions, maybe bigger planets, or planets far away from their suns or closer to their suns. We have different gravity, which has different environments, gases in the atmosphere, whatever, would produce throughout a process of evolution different creatures. But it doesn't happen. It doesn't matter if they are tall, they're short, they all have the same format. It's just like the human race that even in our planet has so many branches. You see, you can get people in Africa next to people in Scandinavia. You try to compare them, it's very tough culturally and sometimes even physically. You have pygmies. Pygmies, you say?
Yes.
Pygmies.
Very small people.
Right. And you can get very small people. And you can get a Sweden from Stockholm. Yeah. Like
7 feet.
So, try to get them together. But anyway, they have the same format. They have two legs, two arms, a body, and a head. Now, if we have differences among ourselves in our planet with 6 billion people, that may be so in the universe or in the large part of the universe. I am absolutely convinced that the humankind is not restricted to Earth, but it's spread in a long amount and a vast amount of universe to many, many planets all over. But the thing is, we have not yet realized that while other people living in other planets that maybe are more advanced than us have already realized that they are part of something bigger. We still didn't, but we will do eventually. And as we still didn't, many other civilizations that formed this human race haven't yet realized that. But we will eventually happen. This will eventually happen. This would explain the whole thing. Now, this is something that most UFO researchers take for granted. That the aliens that we see inside the spaceships, when people get abducted, or when they see in our bedroom visitors, these aliens have two legs, two arms, a body and a head. People think, well, so what? They take it for granted. I don't. I think this is the most important thing in the whole thing about UFOs, because we're not supposed to get visitors so similar to ours. Maybe we should get some exactly like ours, but all of them, if you compare us with them, you realize that they are so similar. Like in their arms, they only have one
articulation.
Why not 2, 3, 7? In their legs, they only have one articulation. Why not more? Why the coincidences are so amazing? They have two eyes. Both eyes are in the top of the head, one in the right. No, you don't find all have spines. Yes, all have spines. Plus, the eyes, you will never find a report of aliens with eyes on the side of the head.
I guess it's because they need to see where they're going.
That's it. They have to be in front of the head. They have to have a nose between them and a mouth before below it. So why so many coincidences? Why do they have two ears? Come on. Ear is a concept for the human race on Earth because it's a result of a biological evolution of this race. How could you expect that aliens that come from other planets also have two? Maybe they could have a different system of hearing that wouldn't require ears. But no, they have ears, and they have two ears, one on the side and one on the other side of the apple. I used to say that the human race is an experience of God that didn't work out. When I told this to Bud Hopkins, he laughed just like he did and said, well, God is also experience of man that didn't work out. Except our God. Because if there is a God, how come we are so destructive? How come we can't put a society in this planet that works for good?
I want to ask you this question about the UFO community in general. Here in the United States, I think spiritualism and that type of philosophy seems to be really on the rise in the UFO community. How about down in Brazil? Spiritualism play an important part?
Absolutely, just like it does here. You know, whoever gets in contact with this massive reality, with this changing reality, this intense reality gets changed. There's no way someone who gets close to a UFO or an alien or inside one ship wouldn't change its perspective of life. It would. Once you realize we are not alone in the universe, but not as a vague concept, but something real. Like you have your neighbor next door, we also have thousands of neighbors in all the stars that we look when we look at the skies.
It's not only the neighbor, maybe we are coming from the same family and we have cousins.
That's
over there.
Maybe these guys are our cousins. Maybe these guys are our
AJ, brothers. I'm going to have to let you and Farah get back to your meetings there at the UFO Congress in Laughlin. But I have to ask you about this disclosure. I know you think it might happen, or at least the beginning of it, down there in Brazil. I mean, you're pretty optimistic, right?
Yes. We believe that this cooperation or this channel of communication between UFO researchers in Brazil, civilian and military personnel, will start with the releasing information about UFOs over the Amazon, especially the ones that were investigated during the years of 70 and early 80s, and especially the ones investigated by the Operation Saucer, that was put upon to work during September to December 1977 by the Brazilian Air Force to try to discover what the hell those lights that were attacking people in the Amazon were. And they did discover what they were.
Yeah,
it's a pleasure for me. It's a pleasure for me. And I would like to say, obrigada por tudo.
É um grande prazer. It means a great pleasure in Portuguese, and it was a pleasure for me.
Hey, I wish I were there, but I'll be in Laughlin tomorrow, and I'll see both of you. Farah and AJ, I've enjoyed it. Great show. Thanks to both of you. This is Jerry Pippin. You're listening to the UFO File.